You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
The U.S. attributes two more strains of malware to North Korea, and whether you call them Hidden Cobra or the Lazarus Group, it's the same reliable crew of Pyongyang hoods. More trouble for the ICO world as unknown but probably bad actors scan for misconfigurations in EOS blockchain nodes. Canadian banks decline to pay extortion. Joker's stash counterfeits show there's even less honor among thieves than you may have thought. Baratov gets 5 years for the Yahoo hack. And Cavassier gets a solid 10-year sentence for multiple crimes. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, May 30th, 2018. The on-again, off-again U.S.-North Korean summit is back on, but relations between the countries in cyberspace remain frosty. There's a good bit of speculation that DPRK hacking will figure among the agenda. In the meantime, the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security yesterday, through the U.S. CERT, attributed two more families of malware to the DPRK's Hidden Cobra threat group. The Bramble Worm and the Jonap Trojan are both said to be the work of Pyongyang. Jonap is a two-stage backdoor remote access Trojan that allows both data exfiltration and installation of other threats onto the victim system. Bramble, worm that it is, abuses the SMB protocol to spread via dictionary attacks on other systems. Once it's in, as Security Week summarizes, Bramble also harvests system information, accepts command line arguments, and executes a suicide script. You may know Hidden Cobra by its other name, the Lazarus Group. The Lazarus Group has got a pretty long rap sheet, albeit with no convictions, since nobody in the world has any kind of extradition agreement with Pyongyang. The threat group has been credibly blamed for the Bangladesh bank Swift Caper, the Sony Pictures hack, which appears to have been part of a larger campaign outlined in the Operation Blockbuster investigations, Operation Dark Soul, a 2013 campaign that affected two South Korean television stations and at least one bank, and Operation Troy, a cyber espionage campaign unmasked in 2013 that was directed against South Korea, and in particular against South Korean military cooperation with the United States. The Five Eyes have also said the Lazarus Group was responsible for WannaCry, last year's misfiring but still very damaging ransomware campaign. That's one attribution we think you can take to the bank. Bleeping Computer reports that threat intelligence shop Grey Noise has observed someone, presumably a threat actor, scanning for EOS blockchain nodes that have accidentally exposed private keys through inadvertent misconfiguration. The scans began yesterday, shortly after Kihoo 360 reported a remote execution flaw in the EOS blockchain platform. EOS is currently the subject of an initial coin offering. The Canadian banks hit with a hacker-induced data breach over the weekend are indeed the targets of extortionists. The attackers are demanding $1 million ransom. If they're not paid, they threaten to release the information online. The Bank of Montreal and the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce have both said they won't pay the ransom. Bravo, banks. There's some speculation as to why the hackers tried extortion as opposed to simply selling the stolen data on some of the usual dark web markets. They may have come to believe that stolen data simply wouldn't fetch as much as they could make through extortion, or they were hoping that embarrassment would induce the banks to pay up, even if the data wasn't that valuable. Or, of course, they may have been interested in getting whatever they could from the banks and then going on and selling the data anyway, since honor among thieves is much frayed nowadays. Speaking of black markets and the general absence of honor among thieves, it's worth noting that Krebs on Security has a piece up about Joker's Stash and its various imitators and counterfeits. Joker's Stash is an illicit carders forum where hoods buy and sell stolen pay card credentials, mostly for what amounts, relatively speaking, to chicken feed. Joker's Stash has been tied to a number of retail breaches, including those at Saks Fifth Avenue, Hilton, Whole Foods, Chipotle, and Sonic. The counterfeit Joker's Stash sites are out there to con the con men. If you, Mr. and Ms. Criminal, think you're going to get some cards from Joker's Stash, look carefully, because you may find the bitcoins you virtually plunked down are gone baby gone without so much as a login credential left behind. We won't offer any more specific advice, since at some level criminals who let themselves be defrauded by other criminals deserve what they get. But do stay away from Joker's Stash. When word comes down from the bosses upstairs that it's time to improve productivity and security, or to do less with more, many organizations turn to automation to make it happen. But that can be easier said than done. Ruvi Kitov is CEO and co-founder of security firm Tufin, and he's got some words of wisdom for companies looking to automate.
There's a good crawl, walk, run model. A lot of times when we speak with customers or organizations who have nothing of the sort, no automation, usually it also means that very often they won't know what their security posture even is, right? So when we ask organizations, what's your security policy? Let's look at zone-to-zone segmentation. So which networks can talk to other networks and which networks should not be allowed to talk to other networks, right? Just connectivity. Let's basic layer three connectivity. A lot of times people scratch their heads and there might be a document written in the CISO office. Some security architect wrote it. There's a big gap between that concept of the security policy and the actual implementation on the ground. And then after assessing, usually there's a cleanup phase where people for 2 to 3 months, they go and they start cleaning up all of the vulnerabilities they discovered, and there's a lot. You want to reach steady state, pretty healthy and clean, state of network security, right? And at that point, the question is, okay, I've done some work, I've cleaned up, and I think I'm in pretty good shape. But if I don't maintain that hygiene, I'm going to, be vulnerable again. I'm going to have all sorts of problems very soon because dozens of changes occur on my network on a weekly basis. So how do I maintain that continuous compliance, right? So then the next phase would be taking that policy element and actually analyzing every single change that is about to be implemented to see whether it adheres to the policy. So then, once you're kind of in a pretty healthy place, you would probably want to have zero mistakes done on the production network because you want to move from being reactive, like, okay, let's look at my network and figure out what's wrong with it to I've cleaned it up and now I don't want any mistakes even reaching the production network. I want to avoid those things to begin with during the change process. There's additional challenges as people are adopting the cloud and they're migrating more and more applications to the cloud. There's a whole nother set of challenges that have to do with policy. What we're seeing is a lot of organizations have a DevOps or a cloud team that is responsible not just for the application, but also for the infrastructure on the cloud side. And they're managing, for example, maybe the AWS configuration. We're seeing a lot of friction between the DevOps team and the firewall team, where, you know, DevOps teams want to build kind of their own security controls, and they don't want a very heavy and manual process of requesting changes from the network security team to allow them connectivity. So we're seeing a lot of issues between DevOps teams and network security teams. And we think that a key thing is how to bake security into the DevOps cycle so that essentially the network security team will have much deeper visibility into the security posture of the cloud. And a lot of organizations are actually flying blind today. So you have DevOps teams making changes in the cloud with very little security oversight, which we believe is a huge mistake. So one of the things that we would recommend is to get tools that allow, first of all, security practitioners to see the security posture in the cloud. And the second phase would be to actually bake security into the DevOps CI/CD tool chain so that you, every time you want to make a change that actually affects security and the DevOps tool chain, it'll be vetted against some kind of a security policy. And we think that's critical as organizations are moving to the cloud.
That's Ruvi Kitov from TUFIN. A U.S. government look at the cybersecurity of federal agencies offers a depressing vista. 3 out of 4 agencies are said to be at significant risk of cyber attack and poorly prepared to manage that risk. Whether or not it's reprieved from U.S. Commerce Department sanctions, analysts think ZTE will find recovery difficult. ZTE and Huawei remain under widespread suspicion of posing security risks. Canadian Premier Justin Trudeau is being asked by many to take a close look at what Huawei's up to in its penetration of the Canadian market. Karim Baratov, convicted of hitting Yahoo on behalf of Russia's FSB, has been sentenced to 5 years. The U.S. Justice Department points out that the verdict should indicate to people that hacking for hire is a serious crime. You remember the fellow who went by the name Cavassier? He isn't French, but English. He's the heavy-handed gent who ran virtually amok in Kent. Anywho, Cavassier, whose given name is Grant West, had his day in court and was convicted of charges related to phishing, drug sales, and other illicit online activity. He will be Her Majesty's guest for 10 years, which is by British standards a pretty stiff sentence. Mr. West is 26. He'll be in his mid-30s by the time he gets out, assuming he serves his full time. He was caught when authorities tracked the IP address of his girlfriend's computer and picked Mr. West up on a train bound for London. The relationship is doubtless strained at this point, or as Facebook might put it, complicated, because the co-conspirator girlfriend got community service.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Justin Harvey. He's the Global Incident Response Leader at Accenture. Justin, welcome back. You know, I feel like we have been running towards this finish line, which of course was the implementation of GDPR. We have crossed that line, and now here it is. It's active. It's a real thing. Do you think that companies are ready? Do you think all these months of preparation are going to pay off for them?
Well, Dave, the glib answer is, I believe my clients are. I don't think that the majority of companies are truly ready for the GDPR. Based upon what I've been seeing in the market, many organizations are scrambling. They're getting their incident response plans going. They are, given the ambiguous nature and the wording of the regulation, I think that it's almost like I should say it's anyone's ball game because with regulations, particularly of this nature, you can't read a document that says this is an incident. And when this types of incident hits this threshold, then you need to report it to regulators. It's almost like regulators want to keep it loosey-goosey and they want to see companies demonstrate that they are trying. I don't believe any organization is truly 100% compliant with any regulation. But what matters is, are they demonstrating the right steps? Do they have the right intent? And if and when something does happen, are they being forthcoming with regulators?
Yeah, it's interesting because it strikes me that there's been kind of wait and see on both sides. As you describe, the regulators waiting to see, are people making a good faith effort? But I think there's been a lot of wait and see on the other side to see, are these potential fines actually going to come down?
That's right. I was speaking with a colleague the other day, and he made an observation that he doesn't think GDPR is here to last. And the reason is, it'll be one large organization, one large company, that will unfortunately have a breach, and maybe they lose a lot of personal data, and then they're looking at quite a lot of fines, and perhaps it even drives that company out of business. And then where does that leave regulators at that point? Who wants to participate in a regulation where the downside is you can lose up to 4 or however many percent of your global annual revenue? So time will tell. I think that this is an interesting experiment. It's funny that I call it a regulation an experiment, but I think this is a new kind of regulation applied to a large region. And I think if it works, if they are able to pull it off, and if it does enforce change and allow society to operate where people can be forgotten on the internet, if they can really, truly have better controls around people's privacy, I think it'll be positive. And even then, the United States should definitely pay attention, keep notice of what's happening with the EU and the GDPR, considering all of the privacy concerns we've been having on this side of the pond.
All right. Well, as you say, time will tell. It's going to be interesting to watch. Justin Harvey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Vaughn, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Ivan, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.